Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. We have an important first for you this month. For the first time, we have not only a story that was written by Matt Wallace, Matt is also the narrator. This is a special gift for you, our listeners. Matt and his arch nemesis, Mer Lafferty, had a fantastic year. They both had their debut books published. Mer released the amazing Playing for Keeps, which rose to the top of the Amazon charts. Matt's short story collection, The Next Fix, got rave reviews. This story is part of that collection. To celebrate, Matt and Mer are presenting the Year of M&M, the grand finale. Order both The Next Fix and Playing for Keeps between December 8th and December 15th, 2008. Send your Amazon.com receipt, dated between December 8th and December 15th, to thenextfix@gmail.com, and you will be entered in their holiday raffle. On December 15th, at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Matt and Mer are co-hosting a holiday bash on Second Life. This venue is the Tiki Bar in State of Mind. All of the cool kids will be there. You originally heard the story of John Busboy Pax here on Variant Frequencies in Children of the Androphagi. Now you get to hear the rest of his story. The end of flesh is so big, we are giving it to you in four parts. All parts will be delivered in December. Each episode will be 1 week apart. Merry Christmas from Matt Wallace and all of us at Variant Frequencies. Now, on to our story, The End of Flesh, by Matt Wallace. Meet New York City Police Detective John Busboy Pax. Pax walks a secret beat that takes him through the dirty underground of what may be humanity's last taboo. But even in the starved and not-so-distant future, the final taboo is still all about flesh.
The End of Flesh by Matt Wallace. Part 1, Busboy. The morning began with two bodies. Detective John Paxson lay as still as a corpse, interred in the darkness of the mausoleum that passed for his windowless, space-efficient unit in the 3300 block of Midtown. Lately, Pax was sleeping more and more between calls and waking up harder each time. When the PDA on his bed's slide-out nitrate lit up, the screen beaming blue light against the ceiling, it was like some weird nuclear winter was devastating the void behind his eyelids. There was no escaping it. Pax got up. A rusty automated machine rolling over, kicking on, ready to grind out another day of operation. The text message on the PDA was simple, a location and a code number. The location was an avenue off the docks. The code told Pax it was likely some citizen had become a lost link in the food chain. If he confirmed that, then it was a long day that stared down at him. Pax called for the lights. He looked at the revolving door of his one-room unit, the one that hid the commode. He probably didn't have time for a shower. He definitely didn't have the desire for one. Instead, Pax stumbled to the wall hamper and hammered a few worn keys on the selection pad. There was a hollow drumming as the sorter separated out a navy blue suit with matching tie. The pants came through the pressing slot, ironed and creased along with the tie. The steam locker next to it hadn't actually produced steam in 6 months. Pax had to drape his jackets from the wall on hooks and do it by hand. He grabbed a no-wrinkle pack out of the shirt dispenser, unwrapped it, and pulled it around his bony frame. When everything was tucked, knotted, and buttoned, Pax moved down the wall to the gun cubbies. There were two pistols, assorted ammo, and a cleaning kit stashed in the first burrow. He slid the large frame of a snub-nosed revolver into his shoulder rig. The .45, a Heckler & Koch USP, wasn't police issue. Pax had picked it up cheap from another detective, Campbell Hoffey. They were partnered when Pax still worked homicide. Since then, Hoffey had taken a half pension and married a real dragon lady he met in Chinatown. They were running a day flop down on Canal Street now. Pax slid the high-capacity automatic behind the narrow crest of his hip, where the leather holster inside his belt welcomed the weapon like an old friend. His service pistol, with its streamed lines, new car finish, and built-in sighting laser, was carefully preserved in a box above the commode. He didn't need electronic triggers or programmable fire rates. After a century and a quarter, the works inside were still pure Colt 1911 anyway. Guns got prettier, and their gimmicks more esoteric, but his gig wasn't pretty, and he'd leave esoterica to the Freemasons. Pax didn't do a .38 caliber job. The rest of his gear was arranged like a tea ceremony of hardware in the night tray. He grabbed his shield, his PDA, a tactical folder he kept clipped to his belt, and a small baton that looked as tame as a tire gauge. Pax slid the tray into the bed, then flipped the whole thing. Bottom up and creased down the middle, his sleeping pallet became a gunmetal sofa that leaked polyurethane. It was good to come home to when not much else was. Before he left the unit, Pax stopped at a mirror by the door. He straightened his tie. He mucked with his hair. It was no good. He remained just another one of the gaunt people, hollow-cheeked and sallow-skinned. Downstairs, Pax crammed himself into a Neo hatchback parked by the curb, bumper riding low under the weight of the boxes and equipment packed tight to the roof. Pax didn't have an office or a desk, didn't have a computer because no one wanted searchable records of his caseload. Officially, Pax had no detail, no department, and no precinct to call home. Officially, he was a floater, like a copy machine moved from floor to floor. Unofficially, when they had a murder with a victim missing tender parts, Pax caught the call and found the skinner. Inching along the city traffic, he scrolled the digital dial of the radio. The music proved too loud for his current state. There was a major detour through the theater district due to food riots. New legislation was up to combine civil population control with the Census Bureau. So not only could a census taker ask how many dependents you had, but he could execute them if they numbered too many. Pax scrolled past a daily update on the cocktail effect. Now that it was done killing 3/4 of the animal population, everyone worried it would jump species. That worry kept scientists all over the country on fat, subsidized payrolls. It was almost an hour before he saw water, the East River lapping in orgies of polluted color. It took another 15 minutes to find the alley where the call came from. The hard, smog-filtered dawn was just breaking over the black mound that some Joe citizen hours before had recognized and reported as a corpse. Pax was late to this party. Techs, EMS, uniforms, everyone mingled without him, sharing anecdotes and coffee. Detectives Bill Andress and Alfredo Vine ran the scene. Vine was a good guy. In fact, he and Pax were partnered for a while when they were both still in uniform. But Andress was a ninth-level Zen Master asshole. The victim turned out to be a four-alarm job. Somebody, or bodies, had burned him down to bare cinder. Pax grabbed his toy box and got out of the car. "Shit, it's the cannibal killer," Andress stage whispered to his partner as Pax crossed the police line. "Don't be a wet end," Vine said, and then to Pax, "Hey, BB." "What do you say, bus boy?" Andress possessed abundant tone and saw no reason to hide it. Bus boy. That's what they called him, cleaning up after the human feast. That was Pax. He just nodded in response. "Not sure this is your thing yet, BB," Vine said. "We're still sorting it. Even if the guy was corpus du jour, we don't know if there's a murder yet. Could be they dug him up. Could be they bought him, ground chuck." "Yeah, well, might as well get ahead of it, just in case." The sooner Pax ruled it out, the sooner he could get back to bed. He set his toy box down and stuck his hands in either end. When he pulled them out, they were gloved in clear latex. He hunkered down by the corpse, more or less just a torso now. The main slag of what was left looked like a diseased mouth. The tips of his ribs faced each other like crooked, blackened teeth, with a tongue made of kidneys and liver in between. It was still pink in a few places. The remains were caramelized to a square foot of concrete raised from the rest of the alley, steel gray on top of dark blue. It looked like it had been poured on top of the finished pavement. "Roasted on a pyre," Pax said. That's almost as good as a spit. It's a rough spot in the paved job, Andrew shot at him. Stop trying to connect dots. Let the man do his job, Billy, Vine said, his tone neutral. This is our call, Al. I'm fucking sick of the zombie slayers showing up and rooting around our crime scenes every time. Andrus kept talking, but Pax was more interested in checking the angles of the alley than listening to his guff. The visibility from the street was bad. The alley dead-ended hard, no access. The crappy architecture and the slant of the buildings would direct the airflow back and out. Pax sniffed. The tide came in strong down here. He could barely smell burnt flesh. And there was a sewer hatch not 5 feet from where he crouched. You boys got a sacrificial here, Pax said flatly. You sure, BB? Vine asked. We got happy time with a gas can here, Andrus said before Pax could answer. We're cleaning up after some pyro celebrating Fat Tuesday early, or some debtor got made an example of by whoever he owed. Pax just shrugged. Advance whatever theory you like. They're all gonna end with, and then they ate him. How do you know? The legs and arms aren't burnt. They're gone. First course. So's the head. Probably dumped down the sewer. Pry that hatch and take a swim. You might find it. Sherlock fucking Holmes over here. Did you check behind the dumpster? Pax asked. The text did a sweep under it. On the dumpster! Pax barked at the text in the dark blue uniforms. Swing it! Everyone kept milling until Vine gave a nod. That used to be like still wool on Pax's nerves, no one recognizing him as a primary. But they'd scabbed over good and hard a while ago. Half a dozen hands grabbed a piece of the dumpster's corner. It sang a rusty nail chorus as they pulled it away from the alley wall, exposing bricks a dozen dull shades of red muddled by age and decay. The only thing new about any of it was a sketch drawn on top. Done in white chalk, the thing was as crude as a cave painting, but the subject matter was far more sophisticated. They stared at the faceless outline of a man, drawn to 1/3 scale. His arms were spread, legs pressed together. Lines were drawn from inside his body to words scrawled on the interior bricks. Worlds like Pectoralis Major and Rectus Femoris. Pax knew that a star meant something was edible. There were simple instructions about cutting, where and how deep to go. It was a diagram. Everything you needed to know to carve up a fire-roasted human being for consumption. Andrus was trying hard not to be impressed. Far as you know, that shit's been there for years. That chalk look faded to you, Billy? Vine said. Anybody tagged over it? That's fresh. He looked at Pax. This is all you, BB. I'll square it with Steelhead. Thanks, Al. Can you get the ID off the DNA to me? What are you going to be doing? Andrus demanded. I know the work, Pax said, capturing a pic of the chalk drawing with his PDA. I'm going to go get an autograph. Spitter had a place in one of the old buildings uptown. Within a year it would be condemned, knocked down and replaced with another building roughly the same size, but with 4 times as many living units. Pax had a long hike up the stairs. There was a note from the super attached to the elevator saying someone had cut the cables, and when he caught the ass grease who did it, he'd give them a colon cleansing with an acid hose. He felt weak and was getting cold rushes by the time he reached the 13th floor. His tank was running on empty, but that was nothing new. He caught his breath in front of 13C, residence of Yanni Alpha Spoof Svitter, a low-rent hacker, trader of restricted information and preeminent artiste of sacrificial design. He was a little scumbag, but useful, jacked into the scene. Pax banged on the door, nice and loud. Svitter! Police! On the door, now! The door opened, just a crack, and Svitter stuck his greasy, green, sideburned mug through it. Hey, busboy, he said. I haven't seen you in a while, since I've been clean. Take 3 steps back, Svit. All right, man. Don't amp the hostility. Svitter backed away from the door and Pax pushed it open. The apartment was a 3-room palace of concentrated filth. Salvador Dali prints and a smear of Hansel and Gretel posters, the tri-state area underground's biggest cannibal rockers, hung on the walls. There was Svitter's hack nest, a quad monitor set up with a mess of fiber optic and coaxial intestines hooked to hardware organs transplanted from dying markets like Taiwan and Malaysia. Most of the shit was burner grade, illegal to import. It was decorated with geek paraphernalia. So, what's in the Daily Edition, BB? Got something to show you here. needs a trained eye. Pax took out his PDA and brought up the pics he'd snapped back by the docks. Check this out. Family photos? Spitter asked before he got an eye full of the charred remains. Oh, damn. He was on the menu last night, Pax said. Yeah, that's an old school Tex-Mex recipe right there. Down by the docks. Dead end alley, sewer access, good venting flow, good concealment. Downwind of the river so the tide wafted the smell. Prime real estate for the purpose. Yeah, so who'd you sell it to? Wait, what? Who'd you sell the sacrificial to, Svit? I don't do that anymore. I'm hawking protein cultivating kits on the net now. You hawk protein kits now. I hawk protein kits now, totally legit. Pax nodded. He stepped around Svitter and walked along the wall of the apartment. He reached out, filling up the plaster like a man searching for a ripe cantaloupe. What are you doing? Svitter asked, watching him. Looking for the sweet spot, Pax said. Come on, Svit. You gotta have a stash, I know you. You're always hoarding hard copies somewhere close. You're having blood sugar issues, BB. Hey, let me comp you a protein kit, what do you say? Pax ignored him, rapping on the wall, here, there, until he banged out a hollow thunk over near Spitter's hack nest. He knocked there again. The sound brought a smile to his face and an expression that looked something like that of a dead dog to Spitter's. Pax reached under his coat and pulled out his Shaolin spade, a plain-looking graphite baton he picked up in Chinatown years before. Pax pushed a button on the shaft and it extended a foot and a half, an outward-facing crescent blade flicking from the end. Pax got a good crowbar grip on the spade and rammed it through the scarred pane of the wall. Turning the shaft a quarter of an inch so the back of the crescent blade caught tight against the inner wall, he gave it a good tug, ripping out a big chunk of plaster and cheap insulation. What the hell, man? Svitter moaned behind him. Pax took a plastic cap off the other end of the baton, revealing a bell-shaped blade. He used it to hack the hole wider, then set the spade aside and reached in. After feeling around for a while, he pulled out a short stack of books, old hardcover texts lashed together with coaxial cable. Pax turned back to Spitter, who looked like he'd just been gutted instead of the wall, and examined the text. Grey's Anatomy, 49th edition, Grey's Anatomy for Students, A Practical Approach to Human Biology by Professor So-and-So, A Biography of Ed Gein, Richard Routley's In Defense of Cannibalism. These are all double red flags, Spit. Pax said. This is a Class C felony, you know that. This is a year and a half all by itself, straight time. Oh, come on, man! You know what I'm holding here? A dead man's hand. You got two strikes. Man, you got no warrant, you got no PC. I should sue the city for damage to private property, man. Look at my wall! I'll see your lawsuit and raise you life in Supermax. You're a fashionable guy, Svit. They say Roosevelt Island is the new Rikers. It's the end scene for lifers. You'll be cosmopolitan until you're 80. Spitter folded. Alright, look, all I did was a solid. For who? I don't know, some chef. I got a rep. He emailed me late last night trolling for real estate. I suggested the alley, that's all. Just a solid. What's the back end on doing a solid? I didn't take a dime. What did you take? Silence. What did you take, Spit? Pax demanded, turning up the heat. A pass. A pass? 2-minute unrestricted access to the city library. So you traded the sacrificial for a limited hack into the closed section of the database. Yeah, right. Dissolving access, self-sealing. No trace, it was a primo hack. Sounds like it. Hell of a commission for a diagram. I can see why you came out of retirement. I didn't have anything to do with the prep, Spitter insisted. I was never there. Bullshit! Pax scrolled to a nice side angle of the brick diagram from the alley. He shoved the PDA into Spitter's face. That's your chalk work. Then I'm getting nominated, man. You're gonna stand here and tell me it's a setup. Fucking A. The only time I was ever there was when I scoped the site months ago. Pax watched his eye movement, listened to his breathing. Physiology didn't lie, at least not without a lot of help. Spitter's physiology said he was telling the truth. All right, Pax said. I want everything you took from the database last night. All this shit's coming with me, too. He held up the medical text. I want to backtrack on the email the chef sent you. I can't. I want something. It's a ghost account, Spitter whined as he dug up the mini disc for Pax. You don't think I checked when I heard the news? Svit, you find me something usable or your next sacrificial is going to have you on the slab in the bowels of Roosevelt Island. You hit my PDA before I clock out tonight. You try and split on me and I'll call out every hellhound owes me a favor to drag your ass back. Busboy, and stop fucking calling me that. Pulling away from Spitter's building, Pax snapped his PDA into the dock attached to the dashboard. It automatically linked to the PD net. "Two-way, Detective Alfredo Vine," Pax told it. "I'm on, BB," Vine said a moment later. "Al, I just left that lead I told you about on the scene. This thing has got some deep pockets. Deeper than you think. How's that?" "We ID'd the meat from the alley. It's Donald Barillo." It took a second for the name to catch. "I'm coming in," Pax said. It was time to brief the captain. Pax saw Barillo's picture once on Manhattan Webzine. Good-looking kid, but earnest. Son of a Lari, Councilman Barillo, who represented the largest district in the five boroughs. Employee unions, protein rationing board, housing allotment committee. And he shot Digiskeet with the mayor every weekend. Pax saw a picture of that once, too. But his kid wasn't a playboy dogging out Porsches on daddy's dime. He was an Olympian, took the silver and snowboard cross at Pyeongchang. He'd studied astrophysics, wanted to teach at NYU, had gotten engaged to a Puerto Rican girl he'd met volunteering on the poor side of town. Donald Barillo was a right guy. And now he was greasing the digestive tract of one or more ghoulies who might have been paid off to do the deed. The captain's office was like the Eddie Steelhead James Museum. It was filled with every important artifact from his football career, spanning from grammar school to his two-year tour in the NFL. There were trophies, game balls, banners, frame stills. Everything seemed to be autographed, in many cases by a dozen or more hands. He didn't have a name plaque on his desk, just three gold championship rings on a little purple velvet pillow. He'd gone third in the draft to the Santa Ana Aviators, went with them to two NFC titles and one Super Bowl. He got the Steelhead tag at the University of Michigan. As the Wolverine star defensive end, his helmet caved in the chests of more quarterbacks than most teams were able to field. He continued his blitzing ways in the pros and was three away from the rushing record when a particularly dedicated guard folded his knee. He joined the force a few years later and rose through the ranks quickly. Everybody loved Steelhead. To the guys in the PD, he was like a god. The twist, Pax found out when he started reporting to him on his unofficial detail, was that Captain James was also a good man. He cared about the boys. He led them the way he'd lead a football team to victory, and he didn't treat Pax like a kicker, even though that's what he was on the totem pole. "I gotta tell you straight, Pax," Steelhead began, stroking a jaw you could base jump off of, skin as black and weathered as the leather of a holster. "I'd really like this to be simple. Tragic, but simple. The kid went walking through the wrong part of town, ended up getting torched by some crazies. Random. It could be out of the papers by next week. Problem is, simple and random just doesn't jive with what I've got so far, boss. You're sure they had him for dinner? Nah, I might as well have a notarized copy of the menu. This is too high profile, Pax. Too high profile to let a cannibal angle get out. You know, we got press who are onto it. We just haven't let them get anything to run with yet. They could turn this kid into a martyr. The tragic symptom of a rising new social ill, all that shit. Anderson Vine can kick over a rock and find half a dozen firebugs that could have pulled a bird on him. He was a good kid, boss. Good kid that got cooked in an alley. I'd really like to find the people that did it instead of rolling some random torch from a gutter and pinning a red star to his chest. Why? Why would anybody zero him? He was clean. He wasn't in the political game. Maybe it's a warning. Maybe a syndicate's cracking the whip on his old man, trying to phantom hand his vote. He's got a daughter, right? They take out the son, he knows they can get to the daughter. This thing could be through the looking glass. And you gotta go down the rabbit hole after it, that it? It's my job. Alright, look, officially Anderson Vine are on this. They're gonna play it straight. You look for the bank shot, the outside line. I gotta talk to the councilman. Absolutely not. There has to be some kind of political weave here. I gotta find a thread to pull. Then go through the back door. What back door? Figure it out, Pax. Pax nodded. He got up to leave, figured that was the end of the meeting. Pax, Steelhead called after him. Yeah, boss? What happens when you find him? when you find the perp or perps. Fit them for a collar. We're in the booking business, right? You heard all I said, Pax. You get these guys in here and they'll sing, full recital. You want to get the bad guys? You want good government for all unheeded by evil influences? Fine. Does there have to be paperwork too? What do you mean? That lady we know, the one with the set of scales, she's blind. Whatever you gotta do, do it quietly enough and she won't know the difference. As long as you're still serving her, there is no difference. I'm nobody's assassin, boss. Not even yours. I don't give a shit what limp dicks like Andrew say to the contrary. Pax, you gotta eat a lot of shit for the job. I know that. I know there are mornings you wake up, you don't even feel like a cop anymore. You don't drink with the boys, you got no squad, no desk, not even a locker. But you are a cop, Pax, a good cop. What it takes to be a good cop these days, well, I'll leave that for philosophers and IA to debate. But I want you to know I'd never ask you for anything I don't expect from a good cop. A lot of people figure the captain for no different from one of the trophies on the shelves in his office. They figured the bosses promoted him so they could play golf together, invite Eddie Steelhead James to their Christmas parties. But Pax knew different. He could have signed an NFL contract as a junior, but he stayed and got his degree. When he was in uniform and every shift boss wanted to do him favors, Steelhead asked to be assigned to his old neighborhood so he could roust out the slam houses and run the dealers and pimps off the corners. When he made captain and they offered him an office with a park view at New Police Plaza, he took over homicide instead. What all that added up to for Pax was that when Steelhead said those words, they were worth more than a gold star. I'm only gonna go so far, boss. And then what? Yeah, well, Pax said as he opened the door. That's the rub.
Thank you for listening to The End of Flesh by Matt Wallace. Check back with us in 1 week for part two. To find out more about Variant Frequencies, please go to our website at www.variantfrequencies.com. If you like Variant Frequencies, tell your friends about us. Thank you. From the Variant Frequencies team, Matt Wallace, Ann Stringer, and Rick Stringer.
It's something I don't really like to talk about, but I understand that it's important. And, well, you know, she stopped reading, and she just stopped reading. And then after that came the drugs and the loose men, as my aunt likes to call them, coming around all hours of the night when she should have been reading. And then she left, and I haven't seen her. I got an address. I think she married one of those loose men, and I hope he's tightened up since then. And I have to do the intervention. I have to send her a copy of The Next Fix, because I'm hoping it will scare her back into reading. If the drugs and the whores and, you know, everything did not scare her enough, The Next Fix should show her what she's missing and should hit her in the jaw hard enough that she'll never stop reading again. So if you have someone in your life who stopped reading for any reason, you should get them The Next Fix, because that will jumpstart it. And I think we're all going to be a lot happier come the new year.
Consider this promo a controlled substance. Only one drug can bring the visceral and the sublime together in a single trip, where the best and the worst of the human drive boils down into a techno-art concoction that's half street-level heaven and half the fiery beauty of hell. From Matt Wallace, Parsec award-winning author of The Failed Cities Monologues, this is The Next Fix. Kick back to the strains of Earth's Last Top 40 as the final human DJ sends a shout-out over the last frequency. Step into the hard-boiled beauty of the Losting Corridor, where that which once escaped a man is met again. Tool up with a lone cop who polices the terrifying carrion underground of the future as you seek the end of flesh. Experience one of the most unique and captivating imaginations in fiction today, collected for the first time anywhere in print and featuring 12 original stories and one full-length novella, The Next Fix by Matt Wallace.
Hi, this is Mer Lafferty from I Should Be Writing and Playing for Keeps and a bunch of other stuff. But I just wanted to say that Matt Wallace is big like Bear. He is smart like Bear. And he writes like Bear. Scary stories that roar at you and make you look for the closest tree to climb. Maybe if you roll over and play dead, the next fix won't bite. Maybe.
Matt Wallace serves up two-fisted literary action, if, of course, your fists are half-cybernetic, the size of ham hocks, and covered in broken glass.
Hey, everybody. J.C. Hutchins, author of the Seventh Son podcast novel trilogy here. Matt Wallace is the boogeyman in your closet. He's the monster under your bed. He's the shadow that slides along the walls. Matt Wallace's writing is so compelling and so terrifying that you'll keep turning the pages, addicted to his work, questing for the next fix.
You order your copy today in limited edition hardcover from ApexBookCompany.com. Are you ready for the next fix?
In a world where evil supervillains run amok and corrupt superheroes care more about their hair than justice, one woman is caught in a web of manipulation. Keepsy Branson just wants to run her bar. She doesn't want to think about her old dreams of being a superhero or her tired ambitions to save the world. But the facts remain that Keepsy and her friends have powers too, and they will soon be needed as Seventh City falls into chaos, and no one knows who are the good guys and who are the bad. Playing for Keeps is a free audiobook from Mer Lafferty, available at playingforkeepsnovel.com.
Introducing 2-Minute Danger Theater, a podcast with an unending appetite for excitement.
Hello, I'll be your alien invader this evening.
Blast off with Commander Ranger and Cadet Nancy as they set foot on alien worlds.
The temperature is 50 degrees below zero.
It looks like we only have one spacesuit aboard the ship. You'll have to wear this bathrobe.
Trek around the globe with jungle adventurer Blake Diamond as he searches for an ancient mystical ruby.
Is that what I think it is?
Yes, I believe we've discovered the Holy Grail.
Damn it! Where's the ruby?
Wherever there's a Nazi plot to thwart or a humanitarian crisis to ignore, Blake Diamond will be there.
Lost Ark of the Covenant, map to the city of Atlantis, Missing Link.
And don't forget The Voice, that mysterious crime fighter who lurks in the shadows.
If you don't talk, you'll force me to use my powers of telepathy.
Oh yeah? I'm thinking of a number between 1 and 10. What is it?
1.
No.
10.
No.
1.
Yes, 2-Minute Danger Theater. Just go to dangertheater.com. Please consult a physician before listening.
Nancy, what are you doing with that llama?
Milking it, sir.